All right. Hello and welcome to the Voices of Pueblo podcast brought to you by the Pueblo Star Journal. I'm Ben Kaysen here with Mo Montgomery. Mo, Hi. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Mo, thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. I'm so excited. Today we're talking about the Fuel and Iron Project, the Fuel and Iron Food Hall, all of the big things going on over there. This is accompanying our big cover story that Roy Harbert wrote for us. So If you haven't read that, go check that out on PuebloStarJournal.org. But Mo, you're one of the big pieces of what's going on with that project. So let's just start with how'd you get involved with Fuel and Iron and what's going on with it?
Yeah. So I first got involved in 2021. I was the director of hospitality and culinary arts at Pueblo Community College. And we were applying for a grant for workforce solutions, kind of looking at exploring apprenticeship options and feasibility for that. And so at the same time, Fuel and Iron was getting established and starting their construction. And so Nathan Stern was kind of making the rounds in a lot of the committee meetings and community conversations. So I connected with him and we realized we're a great fit for the vision of Fuel and Iron and what we were trying to achieve with the college's culinary program, which is really providing a pipeline of talented, skilled individuals into the industry. So we applied for a grant together. We didn't get the grant. And we found that out in late 2021. And then last year in 2022, the college announced that they were closing the culinary arts program entirely.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I started working for Fuel and Iron. And I started by, I did a menu for them for a concept they had in Denver. And then I came on board full time in July.
Wow. That's super cool.
Yeah.
So the project is happening in the Holmes Hardware Building.
That's correct.
Down on Union, which is such a cool place.
Yeah.
What's it been like working in there?
Oh man, it's a gorgeous site. So the building originally was built in 1911, yep. Promptly burned to the ground, and they rebuilt it in 1915. And when they rebuilt it, obviously it was floodproof because it had the kind of structure that the same reasoning why Water Tower Place is still standing today. Yeah. So it survived the flood. It's just a beautiful building. And when it was acquired, it has this historic designation. So it's very limited what you're allowed to do with something like that. But the advantage that Fuel and Iron had was that there was nothing in the building. I mean, it was just a shell with columns and brick wall to wall. And so we were really able to do a lot with the floor plan because there wasn't stuff we had to remove. And so that afforded us the opportunity to put two floors of affordable housing on the second and third floor. So we have 28 new housing units, and that's managed by the Housing Authority of Pueblo. And the idea is if people can afford to live downtown, they can work downtown, and we can have a thriving, vital food scene.
I love that.
So it goes right along with the core mission of what Fuel and Iron is trying to achieve, which is to make Pueblo the best place in Colorado to start a food business.
That's super cool. Yeah. Talk to me about what is that bottom floor going to look like within that building?
Absolutely. So, seven different business concepts on one floor. So Fuel and Iron is going to maintain a central bar, and we hold the liquor license and we'll do a lot of the front of house operations. And then we have an anchor tenant, that's Solar Roast Coffee.
Yep.
And so when you walk in, that's the first thing you see is the Solar Roast. And they're not going to go anywhere. They're going to stay there for as long as the partnership goes. And then we have five tenant restaurants that are all brand new concepts. And those are on staggered leases of 2 to 3 years. So the idea is the tenants can go in and all they have to focus on is their concept, their menu, their branding, and cultivating their customer market. We take care of the front of house operations. We take care of a lot of the infrastructure. There's a very small cost for the tenants to get into the food hall and have all of that wraparound support compared to opening a brick and mortar. And so what we're doing is incubating these businesses to the point where they're going to be sufficient enough to open their own brick and mortar eventually after 2 or 3 years. So and the other piece of that is that we'll always be evergreening our concepts after the first 2 years. So there'll always be something new at the food hall, something fresh and inviting.
That's super cool. Yeah. Absolutely. So talk about what are the first restaurants that are kind of stepping in? What do you guys have set up?
Yeah. So we have Solar Roast Coffee, which, that's not a new concept. We all love Solar Roast.
Oh yeah. It's a staple.
Then we have Diavolo Hot Chicken, and that's brought to us by the owners of Bingo Burger. So Mary Oreskovich, which is a big name here in Pueblo, and Richard Warner. And so this is like a Nashville hot chicken, but with Pueblo chilies.
Oh, cool.
So fried chicken sandwiches. And then the second concept is Mosh Ramen. And that's brought to us by Chef Chris Ducey, who formerly taught at PCC as a culinary instructor, but he's worked at for like every corporate restaurant you can imagine. He's been all over the country with his corporate experience. And so Mosh Ramen is really like an irreverent take on street food. And with their opening menu, it's a lot of Asian stuff, but I know they don't want to be painted into a corner and limited by that. So they have excellent ramen, but they also have like bibimbap and, smothered fries, green chili smothered fries, but like bulgogi fries. And they have a really awesome brand. And then third restaurant is Steel Crescent Kitchen. And that's Chef Ed Tracy and his wife, Dorothy Tracy, who both used to work here at CSUP. Once upon a time, and Ed taught in the PCC Culinary Arts program. He was faculty. And so Steel Crescent Kitchen is Steel City meets Crescent City. So Pueblo in New Orleans. So we're going to have po' boys with green chili on it and muffalettas and a big variety of like salads and soups and a lot of stuff made from scratch. And then our final restaurant, drum roll, hasn't been announced yet. It's the Hungry Buffalo. So I think a lot of folks know the Hungry Buffalo from their food truck, which, by the way, food trucks are starting up tomorrow at Mineral Palace Park. So the whole menu, everything on the menu is bison. So they have bison burgers. They have they use buffalo term. So they have a buffalo slopper. They have short ribs. They have skewers. All kinds of.
I don't think I've ever had buffalo.
You haven't?
No, I don't think I have.
It's scrumptious, and it's way lower in cholesterol than beef.
Oh wow!
I think the texture's like between a beef and a veal texture, so it's like really can be super tender. And actually at home I cook with bison instead of beef.
Wow. Okay.
So, all of our ground beef dishes in my family are bison.
Wow. Okay. So then, for all these restaurants, what does the timeline look like for them to be open and people being able to go eat there?
Yeah. So, don't want to jinx it, but the ribbon cutting is scheduled for April 29th.
Yep.
At 11 a.m. On B Street in Union. So it's been a long journey to get open. We're in the home stretch now. We're doing final inspections. We did some massive hiring events where we had walk-in, drop-in interviews. So we're building our team. We're doing the training, finishing up our health inspection this week. And by the end of the month, we should be good to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. That's so cool.
It's very exciting.
That's awesome. I know you guys have gone on a really long journey to get that everything ready. So I'm excited that it's here. And you mentioned the businesses themselves kind of coming in and being able to kind of have this incubator model for these couple of years before, maybe they go out and have their own shop somewhere that's not in the food hall. What do you think is the benefit for, let's take the taco shop that you're talking about, right? So,
That's the one. I forgot to mention that one too. That was Santa Fonda. So the taco shop that's going to be in there, Santa Fonda, brought to us by Chef Jose Avila, who is a James Beard finalist this year and last year.
Wow.
For two concepts he has in Denver. His third concept will be opening up a food hall. And that's going to be headed up by Chef Ryan Hill, who was formerly at Black Box. So his family owned Black Box and he was the executive chef there. And that one is going to be very traditional Yucatan style stewed meat. You can buy by the pound and then they give you all the fixings for tacos. So it's kind of like a meat and three barbecue concept.
Yeah. I think I let my own stomach get in the way right there. That's the one that I was reading about this morning and got me excited.
Yeah.
But yeah. So like maybe let's just take one of the concepts and be like, how does being in the food hall help them out these first couple of years where they may not have had that opportunity?
Sure. So typical startup costs for a brick and mortar restaurant start around $500,000.
Oh my goodness.
And that's not just for like the physical equipment. That's just the promotional costs and the staffing and, getting your inventory under and, the liquor inventory alone is a massive bill. And so the cost is in the neighborhood of about $25,000 for these restaurants to start up in the food hall. So like a small fraction of the price. And, you know, when restaurants get started, they have all different facets of the business. They have to worry about marketing. They got to worry about front of house service and what does that look like? And they got to do a bar program and promote, get people in the door every day. And then they have all the infrastructure costs. And so what Fuel and Iron is able to do is kind of be an umbrella for all of that and share the infrastructure costs. And, you know, the beauty of it is having being part of seven businesses in one structure is that when any of us get good publicity, we all get good publicity. Yeah. When one of us gets the marketing, it brings every, you know, you go to one of these restaurants, you go to all of them.
Yeah.
And so that way we're able to kind of share in that love. But also we're able to share a lot of those startup costs. So the equipment package, every stall comes with a standard equipment package and the tenants can opt in and out of what they want. Some of them, like the Mosh Ramen, they got a special equipment for boiling noodles. Diavolo Hot Chicken traded out their grill for more fryers, obviously. So, you know, there's that kind of support. And all of the construction headaches are really being taken on by the food hall. So our tenants can just focus on their branding. They get help with the branding. We have, you know, we contract with excellent event planners and graphic designers and social media folks. So we're all able to kind of share those costs. And the food hall itself takes on a lot of those initial costs. And then we charge them back rent and a small percentage of their sales. And so we're able to create this whole ecosystem, and the food hall is the center of an ecosystem with multiple sites and multiple areas of the food system that we're addressing. But overall, every aspect of our project is to make Pueblo the best place in Colorado to start a food business.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about that, you know, cause let's say without the food hall, what are the challenges that a Pueblo business owner might be dealing with if they're like, okay, I want to start a burger restaurant. What are the things that they might run into?
So the first big barrier is navigating the licensing. And the city of Pueblo has done a really good job to put all of the licensing stuff in one place. But before last year, that was not the case. They were all very siloed departments. And there was no how-to guide for an entrepreneur. So you had to literally like go and just beg your neighbors, like, how did you do this? What was this for? What's the next step for that? And so we're able to kind of take all of that and streamline it and give them those resources right off the bat. We're working directly with the Small Business Development Center of Southern Colorado to offer that additional support to our entrepreneurs. And then, so building the brand. So we have a graphic designer that designed all of the logos, so we don't have to go out and find other artists. And for the tenants, we really kind of give them the independence to decide how they want to build the brand. If they want to do, if they're a t-shirt kind of place, or if they're more of a sticker kind of place, or if they're just like absolutely none of that. And so we're able to give them that sort of independence. And then other benefits of being in the food hall is just the networking, the camaraderie. It's a lot easier to get folks to listen to you when you're part of this big project rather than, you know, like a lone wolf, you know, out on your own. So that's some of the ways. And then, you know, with the taco concept, that's a really great example because Chef Jose is also very interested in creating and making the tortillas for all of his concepts in Pueblo. And so we have a food hub commissary kitchen that's going to be a shared food manufacturing space. And we happen to have niche gemalization equipment for making masa for tortillas and a tortilla oven that can crank out like 1,200 tortillas an hour or something crazy like that. And so, and that's in partnership with Rocky Mountain Farmers Union to develop local entrepreneurs. And so what Jose is going to, what we're attempting to do is he's now talking to growers and producers around the state to grow the heritage varieties of corn that he wants to put in his tortillas. And we're able to support local agriculture here in Pueblo County as well. So if he wanted to infuse, you know, Pueblo chilies into the tortillas or something like that, you know, it's right here in the backyard. So he'll be making the tortillas for all three of his concepts right here in Pueblo and employing folks for that. And then he'll be able to sell those tortillas, you know, directly through the restaurant in those dishes, but also make a packaged good product that can go on the store of shelves or shelves on this at the store. And so and the Hungry Buffalo is doing a similar thing with bison jerky. So they're able to really expand into other areas with their restaurant concept, and then really diversify their portfolio of what their brand is.
Hmm. That's super cool. And yeah, and then like you mentioned earlier, like if someone comes to the Hungry Buffalo, they're going to be seeing everything else, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
it's a total.
Yeah. So if you have somebody in the group who doesn't touch red meat, there's other options. Or if you have someone who absolutely hates fried chicken and everybody else in the house wants fried chicken, go to the food hall and then they can have a po' boy or a taco or some ramen.
That's awesome. I think the closest thing Pueblo has to that is probably the mall, but that's all chain, right?
Yeah. Well, no, the mall isn't all chain. We have some graduates of the culinary program.
Oh, really?
There.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. With Seven Branches Bakery. Hi, Jasinia. The mall is bringing in a lot of independent businesses as well. You see, they have a barbecue spot. And I don't want to say who it was that just moved in, but one of our local food trucks just moved into a space.
Oh, good.
In the mall as well. And I liken the food hall to the mall. When I'm trying to explain it to folks who haven't necessarily been to a food hall, I'm like, okay, so, you know, it's all a shared dining area and you bus yourself, you know, you counter service, same thing. Yep. You get a text when your food is ready and you go pick it up at the counter and then you clear your table when you're done, but they're all separate businesses. So we have seven different food licenses with the health department.
Wow.
We have seven different business licenses. You know, we have one liquor license to rule them all, but, you know, so, there's a lot of facets, but what's really neat about it is them all being entrepreneurs. They have the entrepreneurial spirit. Mm-hmm. And so they're like the best students you could ever ask for. They're very attentive and proactive because it's their reputation on the line. It's their investment in the line.
Yeah.
And so they're very careful to protect their branding and their own concept. And so it's a little bit easier to manage when they all have their own business as opposed to if they were all for one business and then they're all your own employees. So they have their own employees and we have our own employees and it's a lot fewer people to manage.
That's cool. So what's the process been like transforming that building?
It's been a journey. The first time I stepped foot in there was in 2021 in June. They had an open house and I remember just like the sound in that building, everything echoed.
Yeah.
And it was
completely empty, right?
It was completely empty. There was like bricks and maybe a few feathers and pigeon poo in the corner. And that was it. It was just swept clean.
Yeah.
And so it's been, it's just watching over the last year or so really is when you start seeing stuff truly taking shape. And you know, when they put in every step of the way, it's like, we could say to each other, oh, it's starting to feel real. You know, we get the framing for the walls. Oh, it feels real.
Yeah.
And then the next week we have walls and we're like, oh, now it really feels real. And even like last week I was in there and I was talking to Chuck from the Hungry Buffalo and he was looking at his equipment. It's all plugged in and ready to go. I'm like, now it feels real.
So here we go.
you know, it's been an awesome journey. And it's kind of like watching your kids grow up. It's just a pleasure all the way.
That's so cool. What does it mean to have the kind of the historical background behind that building alongside with what you guys are doing?
So I think like everything in Pueblo, there's always some historical baggage that comes with everything, right?
Yeah.
But that's one of the reasons why we love Pueblo is because it is like, it's so easy to trace directly back to the owners. And you still see like the phone book in the 1890s here in Pueblo. I don't know if they had phone book back then, but you know, the phone book looks very similar today with the same names that it did. And I've heard that there's like villages in Italy and Slovenia that look like a Pueblo phone book as well. so that's kind of cool. But I think the historical context is everything in Pueblo can be tied historically and easily. And when you put food into that context, then it really makes it special. And that's part of the programming that we're going to have. We're teaching with our apprenticeships. Is cultural heritage programming with the Foodways of Pueblo.
Yeah. So tell me about the apprenticeships. What is that going to look like?
So we have three apprenticeships that we're unrolling over the next 3 years. And there's a couple, before I get started on apprenticeship, I should explain there's two main components of apprenticeship, and this is all laid out by the Department of Labor. So there's related instruction, and that's class time or lab time, and then on the job learning. And this is across every industry. On the job learning is always going to be a minimum of 2,000 hours. Our culinary apprenticeship is going to be two 2,000 hour programs for a total of 4,000. And so we balance the class instruction time with time on the job, and the on the job learning has to be paid. It has to be at least minimum wage. We are creating pathways to a living wage, which is above minimum wage. And there has to be incremental wage increases throughout the program. And as a sponsor, we get to choose when those wage increases are. And so we're just dividing it into a 50-cent raise every 1,000 hours that they work. Cool. So it's a pretty easy benchmark to achieve. They don't have to pass an exam to get their raise or something like that.
Yeah.
And you know, the one of the big goals of apprenticeship is to demonstrate to the learners and the earners that there is a clear, lucrative pathway to a career. That you have a career pathway, you can retire in this business. A lot of folks spend a few years in it and leave, and they never intended on staying in it. And that's an awesome way that we are able to support the community. But the food systems jobs are last a long time and they do pay a living wage. So the culinary arts apprenticeship, 3 years, along the way, if students opt into all of the college credit classes, they'll get 11 professional certifications.
Wow.
At minimum, they will get, 3 ACF, this American Culinary Federation, which is our accreditor. So they'll get 3 ACF certifications and their food safety and sanitation manager certification.
Wow.
That's like the minimum that they'll get, but they can opt into more certifications along the way. We're partnering with Emily Griffith Technical College, which is part of the community college system, but they don't have, they mostly deal with apprenticeship. Mm. So they're all over the state. They don't have like geographical territories.
Makes sense.
And so we're able to offer college credit, and we're talking to a number of high schools in rural southern Colorado, south and east of Pueblo County, and also in Pueblo County. So we're talking to high schools about establishing career tech ed programming or CTE programming. And some of these high schools have absolutely nothing going on in that area.
Sure.
And so establishing this programming, starting with just culinary demonstrations and doing some lectures to the students about career pathways. And then our goal is we're working with a couple different school districts to come together in kind of a central location. With there's a few high schools that are like 30 minutes from the central location, and deliver once a week programming, like on Fridays. I don't know if it'll be Fridays, but
yeah.
To do an all-day college credit concurrent enrollment class. So it's free to the student. The district gets reimbursed for the tuition that they pay for it. And then they can get all of the related instruction for the first year of apprenticeship done while they're in high school.
Wow.
So when they graduate high school, all they have to do is fulfill the on-the-job learning requirement, and they've completed the first level of apprenticeship. So that's one pathway we've built out. But we're also very interested in our local workforce and earners and learners, and getting them employed. So the first year of apprenticeship on the job learning will be at the food hall on a rotation. And so this allows our new entrepreneurs to engage with apprenticeship and engage with the workforce. But they also get some support to offset some of those wages with food. The food hall is matching, and we're getting a grant to match some of the wages. So we're able to start the apprentices at a living wage, but our entrepreneurs are only paying a fraction of what that cost is.
Wow.
And this also allows us as a food hall to employ the apprentices full time so they can qualify for benefits. So they'll have a benefits package as well. And so the first year is done at the food hall, and apprentices will rotate among the 7 concepts. And you know, there's 10 areas in culinary apprenticeship that students have to cover instruction on, things like, you know, there's a poultry, there's vegetable cuts, there's sanitation. And so there's hundreds of competencies they have to check off during this time. And sometimes it's something really simple, like use an avocado in a recipe. And so it's a pretty easy check off, but, we don't want to tell our entrepreneurs what to put on their menu based on the learning program. So there's obviously going to be gaps. There's going to be opportunities for the apprentices to learn within somebody's specialty, and really learn some traditional practices and some artisan crafts. But then there'll be holes. So we'll have apprentice driven events, and in those apprentice driven events, we can create menus that allow the students to
check those things off.
To check all those things off. Yeah. And so that way we're able to simultaneously support our entrepreneurs and doing what they do best, but also provide that wraparound, you know, making sure every check off is there. So the first year in the food hall, second and third years will be with area employers. Mm. And if the student doesn't live in Pueblo and they want to work somewhere closer to home, if they're in Trinidad or La Junta or something like that, then they can choose a site that qualifies in their area.
Okay.
And they can we can do some traveling to do check-in. Mm. There's also options if the student isn't able to opt into the in-person classes, which we'll have classes in Pueblo at our fuel kitchen site, and we'll also have classes at the high schools. But if that's not the right pathway for the student, or if something happens that they're not able to pass a class or something, we do have a backup that's 100% online in partnership with the American Culinary Federation to meet all of the requirements for related instruction. So I've seen it many times where students, you know, they're doing really great, going to traditional classes, and something happens in their life that just uproots the whole thing. It might be a family member passing away, or, you know, forced to move, or lost their transportation, and then their schooling gets totally tossed up in the air. And so having this online option as a backup, the student would be able to take an asynchronous class to stay on track with their peers at their own pace and meet those qualifications. And then there's benchmark exams throughout the whole program for different American Culinary Federation designations. So the last one that they get is certified sous chef. And that ties to an occupation, which is chefs and head cooks. And the average wage for that is $58,000 a year.
Wow.
So that's, however, I should say, all of our apprentices are geared toward entrepreneurship. And so while they can get a really great job in the industry, what we really want to do is develop them into their own business owners. And so this allows for that. And the way we're doing that is the capstone for all of our apprenticeships is going to be the Pueblo Food Project's Entrepreneur Development Program, which was developed a couple years ago. And really kind of goes through all of those, like licensing, how to write a business plan. And it ends with them getting to pitch their business plan to investors. So that's the capstone. Regardless if they want to own their own business or not, they get that hands-on, which makes you a really great manager, even if you don't want to own your own business.
Yeah. And you're seeing it from the entrepreneurs you guys have brought in already.
That's
like,
right.
you know, they're taking that leap and then you're working alongside them. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, workforce solutions for the food system, you know, restaurants make up 10% of jobs in Colorado. It's a huge job sector. And so we just want to really address the gaps that we see in this community with that. We're also creating two other apprenticeships. So we have the culinary apprenticeship that's launching this year, this summer at the food hall. And then the second one we're launching next year is going to be for Fuel Farm. And so Fuel Farm is a quarter acre just south of the food hall. It's on the food hall site. And it's going to have the production of an 8-acre farm. We're going to use a lot of innovative technology, and we're going to have an agriculture apprenticeship program that goes along with that and teaches the technology. We're going to have drone technology for taking measurements of the crops, an aquaponic system, a 70-by-30-foot greenhouse that houses the aquaponic system. We're going to have wheelchair accessible beds. So it's the whole idea is that it's open to all learners. It's inclusive to the entire community, learners of all ages. So not just the apprentice age, but we'll have K-12 programming. We'll have senior programming, stuff for the whole community. And it'll be a place that folks can come. It's Pueblo's first commercial urban farm. So our vision is that anyone can come and spend time on the farm. And it'll be open to the public. And so Fuel Farm apprenticeship, we're exploring 1, 2, and 3-year apprenticeships. That's still in the very beginning stages. We're going to do the physical infrastructure build this next year in our capital campaign. And Fuel Farm itself is a 501c nonprofit. So eventually it'll be the parents organization for all of our educational programs.
That's awesome.
And then our third apprenticeship coming in 2025 is for food manufacturing and consumer packaged goods. And that's being headed up at our site Fuel Kitchens on the east side. And Fuel Kitchens will also be the site for our culinary lab classes as well. We just started construction on that, I think yesterday or day before yesterday. Oh, wow. And that should be good to go this summer. Jolene Collins is the director of operations and mentorship for Fuel Kitchens. And you may know Jolene's name because she's JoJo Sriracha.
Oh, yeah.
So her product is going to be made there. And she'll have a great mentoring program for folks wanting to develop those consumer packaged goods like hot sauces or shelf stable products, tortillas, jerky, that sort of thing. And so the food manufacturing site at Fuel Kitchens is also going to have, we're going to have additional entrepreneur support for food trucks and caterers. So we'll have a commissary kitchen. It's going to work with membership. We have space for about 60 members. And then for food trucks, we'll have food truck parking. We have secure parking. We have a barbed wire fence around the facility. And we're looking at what other services we can provide for food trucks. So like a gray water dumping station, an oil station, that sort of thing. You know, can we have them charge their batteries while they're parked overnight securely? So, you know, we're developing that. Again, that's coming in 2025, but the food truck operations are going to start. And the catering operations will start this summer around the same time we start our classes.
So you mentioned the culinary gets going this summer. Do you guys already have students that are interested and already set up for that? Or
we do. So I've been on the road. I've been going to a lot of high school visits in partnership with Generation Schools Network. So we're working off of the Scale Up grant, which we were awarded last year. And that supports my position and also just the outreach to the school. So every couple of weeks they have me going to career days or just doing culinary demonstrations. And some of these schools, you know, first of all, a lot of these schools are brand new. There's a lot of brand new schools around Colorado. So that's kind of a joy. It's nice to see that revitalization in those communities. Doing the travel, sometimes they don't have any CTE programming at all. And so every kid in the high school will come to these culinary demonstrations. And they're pretty straightforward. I make a really simple dish. But I let them taste things and feel things and smell things. And then I feed them. And then I do a presentation, which is always good with teenagers.
Yeah, say, that's a really good sales record. That's perfect.
And when we talk about career pathways, we talk about the whole project of Fuel and Iron and what we're doing and what we want to achieve. But we also talk about this is what a job in the food service industry could look like. I'm a professional in the food service industry. This is what my experience is. And so giving them that exposure and you know, just ability to envision that it could be something different from what they see around them. That's a big part of the programming.
Let's say that someone's listening to this podcast right now, maybe 18, 19 years old, hasn't figured out what they want to do yet, not sure what's going on, and their interest is piqued right now. Why should they pursue something in culinary and maybe even reach out to you guys?
And you know, 18, 19, 28, 29, 38, 30, we want learners of all ages. But you know, working in the food system, it's where art and science meet. So if you like either of those pathways, that's the place for you. My favorite part of being in the food industry is I get to eat all the time. Eating is like my favorite thing in the world. I like cooking a lot too. But these are legitimate, sustainable pathways. And what I've told students over the years, two things about this industry. This is the industry of second chances. So whatever your background is, like, doesn't matter coming into this industry. So whether you have, you know, if you're just 18 years old and have a pretty typical background, or if you're an older adult, maybe you have some justice involved situation in your life, or we're in DOC or on parole. Like, this is the industry that people go to because the background checks aren't as stringent. And so for folks that are looking to rebuild their lives and really want something that has a lot of vitality to it and seasonality and art, this is a really great pathway. But it's not easy. There's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of, you know, keep your head down and just do the work. You know, food production, it varies so much with supply chains and the weather and the climate and how food is getting distributed and grown. There's so many things that can fluctuate. So it makes it a very challenging industry to work in. But for those who are in it, like, you'll find that they really love it. It's a passion thing. I don't know. Like, you either love it or you don't.
Why do you love it?
I love it 'cause I love to eat. I love, I love the creativity of it. I almost was a painter, like a fine artist.
Yeah.
I was an art prodigy in high school. I thought I was going to go to New York and go to a fancy art school. And then I had a baby in high school. And so that kind of derailed those plans. And so I didn't go to college until I was 25. I had to get to a point where my kids were old enough to go to school.
Yeah.
And then I went and I enrolled in culinary school full time. And I said I wasn't going to go to culinary school until the minute I did. I mean, I don't need to do that. You see all these chefs out there who don't have degrees and they do just fine. And then, you know, working in the industry, I realized it doesn't happen for women very often that they get up to a head chef position and are able to have a kind of position where they can make a difference in people's lives. Unless they have that education. And so that's what really was one of the driving forces of me going to culinary school is I wanted to be able to change the world for the better.
Yeah.
And I knew that that would empower me and give me the tools and the skills and the knowledge to make change.
Wow. So how much prior experience, skill in culinary things do you need to have before you think about doing an apprenticeship with Fuel and Iron?
So the only requirement that we have is you have to be at least 16 years old.
Okay.
You know, we welcome learners of all backgrounds and skill levels. And, you know, I get a lot of young learners who, you know, they practice their culinary skills before they come to school and before they get into the instruction part of it. And, you know, sometimes that's helpful. And sometimes it's a lot of bad habits that they taught themselves that we have to unteach them.
Yeah.
And it's similar with older learners, especially if they've already spent time in the industry.
Yeah.
A lot of the remedial learning is unlearning bad habits that they may have picked up and teaching the new ones and adapting to that. And so, you know, very different dynamics of what learners need at different stages in their life. But, you know, what really you need to be successful in this program is a passion to learn something new and an open mind.
Wow. That's super cool. You're getting me excited about it.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, why is this something that specifically Pueblo needs? Because we talked about how, you know, the culinary industry, how big this is to have this, you know, going on, but why Pueblo?
So I could talk about the economic impact and the vitality of downtown and, you know, the ability to live where you work. And those are all really amazing things, but I feel like the big cultural shift that we are working towards is that Pueblo is greatly undervalued for their culture and unique food ways. And that's the piece I can speak to. I don't know a lot about like sports and other stuff, but, you know, as far as food ways go, Pueblo has a lot of unique traditions that are very specific to the history and the geography of the place and the people that have occupied this land for the last 10,000 years. And so what we really would like to see, and we see that from locals and outsiders also, and so what we would like to do is really build up that cultural appreciation, and we're embedding that into the lessons of this program and there's kind of two pieces that go to that. So our learners get that appreciation. They get the historical context. Why is green chili the way it is? You know, that's the really big question.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'll ever solve that one. I spend my whole lifetime trying to figure out where green chili came from. I have theories, but
yeah, people that like, I've got a lot of family in the South and so they'll be like, what do you mean by like green chili? And I'm like,
what do you mean by gravy?
It's kind of like gravy. Yeah. That's exactly what I usually say. Yeah.
And you say gravy in the South and it can mean so many things.
Sure. Yeah.
But the thing that really ties it all together, gravy and green chili, is that if you ask somebody in Pueblo who has the best green chili, they're not going to tell you a restaurant. They're going to tell you it's their uncle, it's their grandma, it's their mom. Nobody makes it better than Auntie so-and-so. You're never going to get to try it unless you like marry into the family. And you're definitely never going to get a recipe. And that's very similar to gravy across the South. Like it's the sauce of life. And it's on everything.
Yeah.
And so with that heritage and cultural programming, we're also able to preserve the stories and the traditions that are handed down from generation to generation. So there's like artisan crafts that are happening on a regular basis here in Pueblo. And when I moved here in 2015 from Denver, I was shocked. Like I had never seen anything like it. There's like Slovenian uncles making klobasi a couple times a year for their families. And they actually call it klobasi here. And, you know, like almost every restaurant has a hand cranked grinder sandwich, which is unheard of in Denver. Mm. You know, like there's definitely a lot of room for improvement for Italian food in Denver, or at least there was in 2015 when I moved away.
Yeah.
And so like seeing those things and, you know, as an outsider coming in, I was like, this is something special. Hmm. And that's what really, I think, led to me falling in love with Pueblo. Hmm. But I also see a lot of folks that don't value that for that same reason. And they're like, well, that's just my dumb family, or that's my, you know, like, they're like, this is so dumb. But, you know, I think there's really something very special to be had there. And so we're partnering with the Pueblo Heritage Museum to bring in some instructors for, you know, instructors, for lack of a better word. They're going to be like grandmas and uncles and elders that are preserving the learning. And so we have we really want to be able to celebrate that and document it as well. So the byproduct is we get to preserve these unique foodways. And the other benefit is that our learners going through the program are going to have that full context of what it is they're cooking in this community. And when they're ready to come up with their own concept, they can embed that in. So we're looking at like a cultural paradigm shift.
That's super cool. How can the community support and be a part of what you guys are doing?
Sure. So there's so many ways to participate in the Fuel and Iron Project. I mean, I think the obvious one I was talking about today is, you know, if you're interested in a career in the food system, you know, get with our apprenticeships. And then
where can they connect for that?
So probably the best place to go is our website, which is fuelandironfoodhall.com.
Yep.
And the A&D is spelled out, fuel and iron. And then and just put in an inquiry, and that'll go to one of our team leaders. Because some of these apprenticeships are still being built, and we haven't started enrolling students yet. So the other obvious one is come down to the food hall when we open and eat. And we're going to be open 7 days a week. Hmm. We'll have brunch on Saturdays and Sundays at 10 a.m. We're going to be open till 11 p.m. every night and have food service that late. So I know that's something that's when I moved here from Denver, between brunch and late night eating, that's what I missed the most about the Denver culture, is that, you know, at midnight I could go find a taco somewhere on Colfax or Federal. But down here it's difficult, and it's hard to find anything open on Sundays and Mondays.
That's kind of my thought too.
And so being open 7 days a week, you know, we want to be the center of a community, and we want to welcome folks of all backgrounds. We have a kids corner in our, we're going to have like a little indoor playground. We have an awesome mural by Dan Levinson. It's the third mural Dan Levinson has done for Fuel and Iron. So we have a nice area. We have some interactive activities for kids of all ages. But we're also looking at bringing in some programming to support arts. So whether that's like crafting at the table, and for all ages, so we'll have kids programming, we'll have senior programming, the grown-up programming is going to be at the bar. But we'll also have a performing arts space inside. So we have, we'll have live music definitely for our opening. There's going to be live music. But we also have a lot of potential for performing arts and programming. And so, you know, my vision is that we'll be able to provide programming free of charge to students of all, you know, people of all ages across Pueblo, you know, if they want to learn some dancing or some improv comedy or open night, mic night, you know, whatever age they are, that they'll be welcome.
And that's so cool.
And we love the idea of families spending time at the food hall as well.
I'm so excited about this project. So the grand opening is April 29th. And then is that just kind of like from then on, it's ready to roll from then?
Yeah. So our first like real, our ribbon cutting's on the 29th. We're open to the public the whole week before.
Okay.
We're just doing like a quiet, I'm announcing it on this podcast. I don't know how quiet it'll be, but we're just doing like a quiet opening starting that Monday.
Okay.
Before. And so we'll be open those days. And on the Friday, the 28th, we're going to have some grand opening activities. And then the ribbon cutting is on the Saturday, the 29th.
That's awesome. And then do you guys have social media that people can follow to check out
For sure. Yeah. Facebook, Instagram. I don't think we have a TikTok yet, but we definitely have a person who's dedicated to,
to our
social media aspect.
Good.
Yeah.
Good deal. Cool. Well, Chef Mo, I think that's all I got for you.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Yeah, man.
It's a pleasure.
I am so excited for this project. That is so cool. So yeah, if you're listening to this podcast, go eat there. Go check out all the things that they're doing.
It's at the corner of Union and B Street, this 400 South Union.
And it's a huge building. Once you see it, it's that big old Homes Hardware building is what it's called. So I can't wait. So thank you so much for your heart for Pueblo. That's such a cool thing. For you and then the entire project. I mean, that's been the part that stands out to me the most is you guys care for this place and care for these people. And so thank you for that.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. For Ben and Chef Mo, have a great rest of your day. Check out our previous podcast right here. You can check them out by searching Pueblo Star Journal. You can also check out our awesome paper by checking out pueblostarjournal.org. We have a long article on this as well that you can check out, written by Rory Harbert. So go give that a read.
Thanks, Rory.
Yeah. Rory did a great job on that. So, and Mo is in that as well. So check out some more quotes from her in that. If you like this podcast, share it to everyone you know, send it to people, put it on your social media, throw it wherever you want to throw it. We'd really appreciate that. Thank you so much for listening. For Ben and Mo, have a great rest of your day.
Thanks.